Thank you for tuning in to Voices for Freedom, an anti-human trafficking podcast. We want to acknowledge that the content we discuss can be emotionally challenging and may evoke strong reactions. The stories we share often delve into tough subjects related to human trafficking, which may be difficult for some listeners to hear. Our goal is to raise awareness and promote understanding of the complexities surrounding human trafficking. Listener discretion is advised. Coming up on Voices for Freedom, an anti-trafficking podcast.
We worked with several people that were on the streets that said that they had been approached by people looking for sex. Situation that was happening is you would have somebody that would come in for the Super Bowl. They're driving down the streets and they're saying, oh, that person, maybe I can give them $100 and take them back to my hotel room for an hour and then send them off. I remember talking with one buyer and during the Super Bowl time, and his justification was that person looked like they needed money. I just provided them with finances.
Welcome to Voices for Freedom, an anti-human trafficking podcast brought to you by Operation Underground Railroad. Along with my co-host, Jessica Mass, I'm Matt Osborne. We have had so much fun over the past several weeks with different episodes. I know you got a chance to host some. And today we're going to be talking about the Super Bowl and whether the Super Bowl is the largest human trafficking event in the world. Some say yes, some say no. But we're going to talk about that just for a few minutes. And what we're really going to focus on, though, is regardless of whether it is or not, what does trafficking look like? How do traffickers take advantage of the vulnerabilities of their victims? And most importantly, what is it that fuels this all around the world? It's the demand side. So Jessica, I will just ask you, because again, we look at some of our former partners here, we respect a couple groups. International Justice Mission asks, is the Super Bowl the largest human trafficking event in the world? Agape International Missions has a spotlight on human trafficking. Is human trafficking increase around the Super Bowl? And then there's an article I saw on Yahoo News saying, it's time to retire Super Bowl sex trafficking stings and myths. So why don't you kick us off, just if someone were to ask you the question, Jessica, based on all of your experience working with victims and survivors over the years, is the Super Bowl the largest human trafficking event in the world?
Yes. So what I would say to that is sometimes the debate takes away from the actual issue. Yeah. And the issue is are there vulnerable people that can be exploited during these types of situations? And I know we're going to talk about demand later, but you look at a large sporting event where there is a demand there. There's people there that want to exploit other people for sex. And so when you look at the foster care system, for example, you have kids that are aged out of the foster care system that are living on the streets that are in survival mode in general. And there's a lot of people that will exploit those vulnerabilities and use them for sex. You have people that are trying to provide for their children that are also in vulnerable situations, and people will come and exploit them for sex. I could go into lots of different vulnerabilities as to why somebody might be exploited, but the issue is you take all of these, primarily men are the demand, right? Not to say that they're the only people that are the demand.
Vast majority, we have to call it for what it is and say for what it is.
So you have all these men coming in for a sporting event, and they are looking for different situations to exploit somebody's vulnerability to have sex with them. So then you have traffickers that say, I have all these buyers coming in. I want to exploit these men as well. I want to make sure I'm using these guys that are coming in for these sporting events and using these vulnerabilities of these people that can be sex trafficked.
Right.
And so you have a trafficker that's like, these are perfect events. I don't have to set this up. It's already set up. I've got buyers. I can exploit these girls with these vulnerabilities and the trafficker is like, I'm just going to bring these together and I'm going to profit off of everyone.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, what I always say when someone asks me, because I'm probably have been guilty of saying, and the Super Bowl is the largest largest human trafficking event in the world. And we're going to talk in the next segment about some of the outreach you've done during Super Bowl times. But what I say is, look, it's just this percentage of men who would exploit. But when you bring together this amount of men, right, at a Super Bowl or a World Cup or a big sporting event, chances are there will be more demand there. And I will tell you that in the run-up to this most recent Las Vegas Super Bowl, I saw a lot of news stories on ramping up and federal task forces and Homeland Security taking the lead with the FBI, with Clark County, with Las Vegas police. They certainly expected a lot of human trafficking cases. I'm sure I've missed something, but I have not found any actual news stories of human trafficking arrests. The one arrest I saw was two clowns running onto the field during the game. They were arrested. So when you look at Las Vegas Super Bowl arrests, that's what comes up. But Agape International Missions, one of our former partners, we love them. They do amazing work. They actually put together some tallies over the past few years. So if you allow me to read here. So in 2023, they have no stats yet on 2024 Las Vegas. 2023, Glendale, Arizona. They had the Phoenix Police Department out, and they had 48 felony and 300 misdemeanor arrests during a crackdown on human trafficking and sex trafficking. Five minors and one adult victim were removed from crime scenes. So you do have some, right, where they're arrests. 2022, then a year before, SoFi Stadium, Los Angeles, California. During Super Bowl week, 500 prostitution-related arrests were made in Southern California, resulting in the rescue of dozens of survivors. 2021, Tampa, Florida, they had 71 men arrested on prostitution-related charges in an operation they called Operation Game Over. I love that. Three of them faced human trafficking charges. Six survivors were rescued. And they have stats for 2020 and 2019, but you get the picture. But here's a question for you, Jessica, because, again, it's being debated now. It's sort of a which comes first, chicken or the egg. Are there more arrests because the Super Bowl is causing more demand, or are there more arrests because law enforcement's ramping up because they think there will be more demand? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I think it's a fair question to ask, and I could see somebody falling on either side of those things. But I would say if you're having law enforcement ramp up on all of their interventions, why? Where did that come from? Was that just a myth that somebody made up and then law enforcement responded to?
Right.
My experience would say that when you have vulnerabilities, someone's gonna try and exploit them if there's a buyer.
Right.
And so I think that the awareness that came to the event, like the Super Bowl, came from there being traffickers that were exploiting somebody's vulnerabilities because there was buyers. Now, when I was a kid, I don't remember hearing about this. We watched the Super Bowl as a family every year, and I don't remember hearing anything. So I can see how the Super Bowl event planners and everybody that's putting the Super Bowl on would be very upset. They're like, we have this event. It's an American event. We have millions of people watching. Stop saying that we are creating human trafficking.
Right.
But I would say to the Super Bowl event planners and everybody involved in the Super Bowl, if they are actively saying, let's make sure that this doesn't happen versus we don't want the negative attention and press, then there could be a bringing together of the organizations, the anti-trafficking organizations, the law enforcement, and the Super Bowl. So that would be what I would think would be the best solution, is to bring everyone together.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I would say that when you have an event that brings together a lot of men, and maybe it's guys' groups and guys' weekends, and maybe their bachelor parties and other, I think there's going to be still a lot of demand. Now, remember, too, this being in Las Vegas, where, you know, there's a lot of a tolerant zone there. And again, I know they'll say prostitution isn't legal there, but it's certainly in a lot of ways decriminalized, I would say, or certainly allowed. So how do you look at something like a Las Vegas Super Bowl, where almost anything goes, right? And again, not slandering Las Vegas, but that's kind of the image. And then you see some of these other cities. But to give equal time, so again, this Yahoo News article, it's time to retire Super Bowl sex trafficking stings and myths. They say sex workers call to stop the stings. So they said that a group of sex workers, I never really like those who just try to champion and say, look, these women are out here, they're kind of pushed. I would think that maybe they were being put up by some of the organized crime groups, some of the others exploiting them. What is your thought when you see a group of women? Again, we don't slander the women. We support the women. We support the victims and survivors. But those who are saying, hey, sex workers, we have rights. I never know for sure whether they really are there on their own free will and accord or whether someone is threatening them through force, fraud, or coercion that you're going to go out and you're going to picket. Do you have any thoughts on that?
It's definitely a debated topic right now, both locally and on a national level. My own opinion on that would be if the sex workers are saying that and they are acting on their own accord, then there are still people that are being exploited.
Right.
So even if you have one group of people saying, let us work, we're working on our own accord, you have this whole other group that's being exploited, specifically minors. If you have a minor that's being forced, fraud, coercion, all those different things, in any way, shape, or form, there's trafficking and exploitation happening.
Right.
And there are also women that I've worked with that are over the age of 18. Lots of women that I've worked with that are over the age of 18 that say, I thought I was going to do this. I thought I was going to be a model. This is in the United States. I thought I was going to, for a modeling job, a promotion, a promo model type of job. And then I was forced to be in an outfit that I didn't want to be in, whether that's a bikini, no clothes at all, things like that. And I was filmed during these situations, or I was forced to go and sleep with somebody, but I thought I was doing something else and I was tricked into doing this.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think as we start to wrap up here, again, we'll put just a quick bow on this whole Super Bowl. Is it a magnet? Is it not? Because again, we really want to focus on in the second and third segments on what trafficking really looks like. And I love, that's what IJM says. Look, no one knows for sure whether it's a magnet, but regardless, this happens 365 days a year. So to the extent that the Super Bowl raises awareness of human trafficking, I think that's great, right? We all are there. We want more people focused on human trafficking. But let's not forget the other 364 days of the year. So we are going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to have Jessica talk a little bit about some Super Bowl outreach she did a few years ago on behalf of Operation Underground Railroad. I'll talk briefly about the It's a Penalty campaign that OUR supported in the past. But then we're going to quickly pivot to talk about, again, what does human trafficking look like every single day? Why are traffickers able to pry on women and girls with vulnerabilities, boys and men as well, and then we can dive into a little bit about what I think is the most important is the demand side. Thanks for being here with us on Voices for Freedom, an anti-human trafficking podcast. Don't go anywhere. A big thanks to our sponsor, Our Rescue Store, for supporting our podcast. The Our Rescue Store is committed to responsibly sourcing products that ignite conversations about human trafficking, raising awareness, and contributing to the movement against it. With more than enough colors, designs, and items to choose from, there's definitely something for you. Find something you'll be proud to own and be an advocate for change. Visit store.ourrescue.org and use the promo code VOICES10 for 10% off your purchase. That's VOICES10 on store.ourrescue.org.
Welcome back to the Voices for Freedom, an anti-human trafficking podcast. We are happy that you are joining us today because we want to talk about topics that are debated, that are hard conversations, and we want to bring light to them, and we want to invite you into them. Maybe this will help spark a conversation at your dinner table tonight, because we care that more people start engaging in this anti-trafficking movement, because that's the only way that trafficking will have a end to it. We need everyone. And so that's why we talk about these conversations and these topics that are debated. And so, Matt, we've been talking about the Super Bowl specifically.
That's right.
And we don't want to stay on this too long, but I will share a little bit of my experience when I was doing outreach with several different local anti-trafficking organizations on the aftercare side.
That's right. Remind me, was that the Tampa Super Bowl? I'm trying to think from a few years ago.
Where were you?
Tampa Super Bowl, right?
Yeah.
Okay, absolutely. Yeah, and I wasn't even involved in that, but heard from you afterwards what you were on the ground. So share a little bit, yeah, with the audience on some of the things OUR was helping to sponsor during that Super Bowl a few years ago.
So we did actual street outreach because we knew that the vulnerabilities of the girls on the streets could be exploited. and that people could lure them into being purchased for sex when that's not something they normally would have been involved in, but because of their vulnerabilities and there being such a demand for sex. We also worked with law enforcement on the ads that were created online. And so there were several ads that I personally saw and that we were a part of calling those ads, where there would be people that are advertised online, whether that's Craigslist, their local KSL type of platform, and then you go into your TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, all those different types of social media platforms as well. But the ones that we were working with were more of a Craigslist type of platform. So you would have girls that were being advertised on there. And I've seen this throughout the years of working in anti-trafficking, where they'll advertise minors for sex using specific words that somebody that knows what they're looking for.
Little codes, right? So law enforcement's not going to trigger their algorithms or anything, right, to go and try to bust them. A little bit sneaky. Do you remember some of the terms or some of the terminology they were using?
I try not to say those terms because I don't want to spark someone to go look for that.
Good point. Yeah.
It's disturbing as well, some of the things that they use to refer to for minors and how to specifically find them.
And I imagine pedophiles every year, right? The networks are changing the words. They're trying to stay one step ahead of law enforcement, right?
Yep, exactly. And so having those children and adults listed on those different platforms, and then we would call and we would then hear typically a man on the other line saying, this is the price for that person. If you want to purchase them, we would let them know that we were actually not there to purchase them, that we are an intervention organization. We would report that number to law enforcement, that phone number that we called, and then they would take over from there.
Yeah.
So there was that side of things. Then the outreach side of things, we worked with several people that were on the streets that said that they had been approached by people looking for sex. Situation that was happening is you would have somebody that would come in for the Super Bowl. They're driving down the streets and they're saying, oh, that person, maybe I can give them $100 and take them back to my hotel room for an hour and then send them off. I remember talking with one buyer and during the Super Bowl time, and his justification was that person looked like they needed money. I just provided them with finances. And so I did them a service by sleeping with them and giving them money. And
anything they can excuse or protect themselves. Do you remember the It's a Penalty campaign, which they still use as well? And I noticed that in Las Vegas this past year, and I saw this past Super Bowl just a few weeks ago, that they had many of their main resorts and casinos supporting, including the Las Vegas Raiders, some of the airlines, including Carlson Travel Companies, which is where our new CEO, Tammy Lee, had some experience in the past. OUR was a sponsor a few years ago of It's a Penalty, that campaign. And I remember in the American Way magazine, American Airlines, that we were there listed in this ad, and it was four people flying to Florida. I can't remember if that was the Miami Super Bowl or which one, but on a big American Airlines route. So that's interesting to know that OUR was on the ground. Hopefully we can help in the future. But while we have time in this segment, as we mentioned a few minutes ago, regardless of whether the Super Bowl is or isn't the largest human trafficking magnet out there, that is beside the point because this happens on the other 364 days as well. Talk to us a little bit about sort of what trafficking looks like in the U.S., certainly with the survivors you've worked with, because it's different overseas, and we'll have other episodes that talk about that overseas. But what does it look like here in the U.S., and what are the traffickers preying on? Because remember, in our last segment, we're going to talk about the buyer, the men's side, but talk about from the victim and survivor perspective on why there are so many vulnerabilities.
I'll touch on It's a Penalty campaign a little bit, too, because I remember that so well, because Liam Neeson is who did it.
Yes.
He was such a supporter of anti-trafficking because he's the one that always gets referenced for Taken,
right? So many people, all they know about human trafficking is Taken. Okay, it's not Taken, it's not Pretty Woman, it's somewhere in between. So you're absolutely right.
Yeah, and Liam Neeson was like, I don't want to be the reason why people think that this is the only way that trafficking happens.
Yes.
And so he stepped up, was a part of that campaign, It's a Penalty, and he wanted to be a part of the solution, not just the reference that all anti-trafficking organizations use. It's not just like the movie Taken.
I had forgotten about that. But that's good. We love Liam Neeson so many, for so many reasons. Well, good. We'll talk about a little bit about these vulnerabilities, because again, at the end of the day, it's that's sort of the source and then preyed upon because of the demand.
Yeah. So in the United States, like we mentioned, it's not just like the movie Taken.
Right.
And Liam Neeson agrees. And so in the United States, a lot of times somebody can be trafficked from their own home, still living at their house, and there'll be different situations where the trafficker will contact them on Instagram. And they'll start to make them think that they're a 16-year-old boy who's attractive, and they'll make this girl fall in love with him, and they'll really groom somebody. Mm-hmm. And in the United States, grooming and how it happens is so prevalent that if we're not educating our children, all of our children are at risk for this.
Yeah.
And so they'll contact them on Instagram. They'll make them think that they're their own age, try to make them fall in love with them, sometimes called the Romeo trafficking. So they'll get them either to send pictures of them in swimsuits or nudity, and then they'll make them think that they're just sending them to them. And then they'll start to ask for more and more and more.
And what happens if they don't send them more and more and more?
Then they say, well, I'm going to send the pictures you've already sent me to your parents. Mm-hmm. I'm going to post these on social media. And so they start to manipulate them to get them more. And oftentimes what they'll do with these pictures, with these videos, is they'll sell them online for child explicit material, formerly called child pornography.
Yep.
And so they'll sell their images. And so now they're using them, and they feel like they have control of this vulnerable girl, which can be anyone. It can be somebody who is a honor student. I've worked with kids that are from very wealthy homes. I've worked with kids that are from extreme poverty. And so when you look at the social media side of things and how people are being sexually exploited and trafficked on social media, if we as parents aren't a part of being involved in our kids' social media, they are all at risk.
Yes, absolutely. You know, I saw one time, and again, I'm not the expert you are on sort of the vulnerabilities, but I remember from my school days, Maslow's hierarchy of needs. These traffickers fill those needs. Is it some of the basic needs of food, water, shelter, clothing? Is it needs of feeling belonging, feeling love? And I use the example of my two daughters now, college age. They're kind of through the danger zone for the most part. But one of my daughters didn't want for any of those type of needs. However, she always needed to be told she was beautiful. She always needed to be told that she was radiant. And I know oftentimes that's sort of how they lure them in. You talk about the Romeo aspect, but let's not kid ourselves. It's not just people from broken homes. It's not people from who don't have any chance, you know, at life at all. It's just something that triggers a girl's needs, a boy's needs, and that's how they get lured into the network, right?
Exactly. And I think you hit right on it, where it's we all have a desire to have belonging. And sometimes those are things like, I need to be told that I'm attractive because that's what makes me feel like I'm wanted. And so traffickers will exploit that. Other times it's, I'll give you a cell phone, and now I've got the coolest, latest iPhone, and now I look cool with amongst my peers, but then the trafficker is going to then use that as a grooming tactic to say, now you owe me this.
Right.
And so I would say that in the United States, trafficking, does kidnapping and trafficking happen? Absolutely. But there's also video games, for example, where you have the chat rooms on the side, and you'll have somebody pretending to be another child, and then they get their address, and then they get them to either come to the trafficker coming to their house, or get the child to meet them at a park. And so there's things like that happen where you have to really be involved.
Yeah.
And sometimes one of the things I've seen is that if the parent isn't highly involved in their child's life, that doesn't mean the best friend's parent can't be.
Correct.
So I would say as a community, as a whole, we need to be looking out for our own children and for our kids' friends as well, because we really have to all be looking out for our kids, because traffickers are waiting to prey on the vulnerabilities of children.
Yeah. And again, as we said, can't be emphasized enough, though, all of what you just talked about, this grooming, preying on vulnerabilities, dangers of online and in-person sexual exploitation. This happens 365 days a year, not just on the Super Bowl and not just in the run-up of the Super Bowl. And that's what I think people need to know of, you know, that this is happening. We're going to have some episodes down the line where we talk about online safety. We talk about cyber, you know, grooming. What we're going to do now is we're going to end this segment here, and we're going to come back for the final segment, and we're going to talk about from the other end, the demand side, the buyers, something that's near and dear to my heart because I think this is the long-term solution. And we'll be right back in a few minutes. Don't go anywhere. This is Voices for Freedom, an anti-human trafficking podcast. I want to thank our sponsor, The Our Store, for supporting this podcast. Did you know The Our Rescue Store features survivor-made items? In this critical fight, they serve as symbols of hope. By choosing to purchase one of these beautifully handcrafted items, you will impact the healing journey of survivors and help them reclaim their lives in the process. We encourage you to shop survivor-made items on the Our Rescue website. It might only be a few dollars to you, but it makes a world of difference to them. And in case you need any extra motivation, use promo code VOICES10 for 10% off your purchase at store.ourrescue.org. That's VOICES10 at store.ourrescue.org.
Welcome back to the Voices for Freedom podcast. We are so happy that you're here, because we are talking about the Super Bowl, we're talking about vulnerabilities, and we're going to talk about demand now. And you might hear in our voices, Matt and I get very passionate about this, because traffickers are not afraid to go after vulnerabilities of these victims and then survivors. And so we have seen firsthand all these different situations where traffickers are intending to groom your children, whether that's during an event or during their normal lives online. And so, Matt, I know you've worked a lot with the demand side, and you have gone after that very strongly and with a lot of passion. So could you tell us a little bit about the demand and the work that you've done, and also why do you care so much about that side of the issue?
Yeah, this to me now is what really gets my, you know, my passion going, because this is the long-term solution. And as we empower law enforcement to rescue and rehabilitate victims of trafficking around the world focused on children, we're starting to ramp up now an awareness program more, because that's the long-term solutions I mentioned. And I've worked this issue from, you know, CIA, Department of State, from the policy side, intelligence side, leading OUR rescue operations, working with you on aftercare, now in this type of awareness raising. But what I've seen clearly is, and again, this you can't overemphasize this, if there was no demand, there'd be no supply, right? There'd be no need for trafficking victims. And we talked earlier about the trafficker, because it's three legs on a stool. There's the trafficker himself or herself. There's the victim, right? And soon, hopefully, the survivor. But then there's the sex buyer, the John, if you will, right? And apologies to any of you out there named John. That's just what they're called, the Johns. And that's where we really need to start focusing on long term. I've had a chance to work in the past with a couple of organizations focused on that. There's a great group in Dallas called New Friends, New Life. They have something called the Man Kindness Project, where they reach young men. But think about it in this way. No man just wakes up one day at the age of 30 or 40 or 50, and you know this, and says, today I'm going to dial up a prostitute. I'm going to get online and get an escort. I'm going to go to the Super Bowl and go with some buddies and get a stripper and then pay to take her to do whatever. It's a journey of 1,000 steps. And those first steps are objectifying women, calling them certain names, the B word and worse, or thinking of them as that, is, you know, boiling all of their essence as a human being into their sex parts, right? Going with the flow. Hey, we're going out tonight and we're going to look at this and that. And if we can stop that early on, if we can truly define for men that this is trafficking, it's not prostitution. These are victims out there. They're not volunteers. Then I think that's the long term. So any men out there, right? And I know you're tuning into this because you're part of the solution. Well, that's what we need you to be. So many around the world might say, well, I would never buy sex, so I'm not part of the problem. Well, that's great, but that's the floor. We need to raise the bar here, and we need to encourage others to educate. So a lot of that is talk about healthy masculinity. And I can sit here and talk till I'm blue in the face, and I will a little bit more in this segment as we go back and forth and talk about toxic masculinity, talk about pornography, talk about these type of things. But the most impactful is what you see, Jessica, on your end, the survivors, the victims. Can you share again, and obviously protecting identities, protecting things, but what have you been told in the past? Because remember, you're dealing with these vulnerable women right after the rescue who have just been raped and abused for weeks, months, years. What do they say about the clients? Because that's what I want this audience to realize is the clients, they're all of us. They're from all walks of life. Average six-figure income, married, have kids. Well, we wish, don't we, that traffickers and predators would walk around with horns and a tail, right? That would walk around where we could, no, that's a trafficker, that's a pedophile. No, they're in society. So help us a little bit to understand who was on the other end of that purchase when you see these wonderful angels, these vulnerable women come out of this situation of sex trafficking.
Yes. So, Matt, first I want to say I'm so glad that you are willing to talk about all of these different things from a male's perspective, because what I hear a lot of my male friends say is they're like, well, we don't talk about this as guys.
Right.
We don't bring it up. We don't call each other out on these things when in reality, these are the things that guys need to be leading the conversation with each other on.
Right.
So you touched on pornography, for example. Oh, yeah. A lot of times people don't realize that when they are engaging in pornography, who that person is on the other side. Mm-hmm. And I've worked with so many survivors that were tricked into this, both minors and adults. And people think like, oh, they're a consenting adult in that pornographic video. Well, one of the girls I worked with, she was told that she was going to have a modeling job in California. She was taken to California. She went on her own accord, buying the flight, showing up there, thinking, I get to be a model. Yeah. That's so exciting. What happened is that she was then drugged. She was forced to be in these pornographic videos. She was told that if you don't look like you're enjoying it, then you're going to get the beat out of you. Mm-hmm. And she saw some of the other girls that didn't look like they were enjoying it in this pornographic video.
Wow.
That's on a major porn site. So these videos went to a major porn site that had consequences that have come to them more recently.
Yeah, good.
But you think about this girl thinking that she's going to be a model, shows up, gets drugged, forced to be in these pornographic videos. And then you have the demand side of people looking and engaging in these videos, and they have no idea that she struggled with wanting to end her life and had attempts of ending her life. Her entire social network now all knew about her videos.
Yeah.
She had people coming up to her on the street saying, I saw your video.
Oh my gosh,
and treating her like a piece of meat on the streets because they're like, oh, you're just a girl that was in a porn video.
Yeah.
I can now objectify you now as well. And her life was completely destroyed. She's had to rebuild it from the ground up.
And I imagine that the majority of those men looking at her, watching her in the porn video, either didn't know or didn't want to know that she was there of her own free will and accord. And, you know, pornography, and that's something that I've been hugely advocating against, and again, not as some, you know, fuddy-duddy moralist, but just seeing that this is now a national health crisis when you think about it. And I use myself as an example, right? It's a little embarrassing, but it doesn't make me look good, but I'm 52 years old. I can't remember what I had for lunch the day before yesterday, right? True story, the day before yesterday. But right now, I can remember, and vividly, if I close my eyes, I can see the pictures, the images in the first Playboy magazine I saw when I was in fifth grade, and I can still see those pictures. And that was when it was on a glossy paper, just images. Now it's video and audio. It's on demand. It's racist. It's misogynistic. It's homophobic. It's violent. It's children. And that is what's so addicting. But as you, as a consumer of pornography, I'll just say, you have no idea when you're reading or watching if those victims on the other end, or let's say this way, if those participants on the other end want to be there or not. And what you just mentioned, and how many times have we heard and seen stories that either victims and survivors were forced to make pornographic videos, or that there was porn being shown all over the brothel, right, to desensitize them. I mean, do you remember some of those stories you've seen that just show this tie between pornography and sex trafficking, between pornography and child exploitation?
Yeah, there's so many stories I could share that I'll have to limit it. There's girls that we've worked with that are minors in other countries that Americans have flown down to film them, and then they'll sell that child explicit material on all the U.S. porn sites. It's often been said that we're the number one consumers and producers of pornography.
Yep, we are.
One story, though, specifically of a girl that I worked with here in the United States was forced to watch pornography when she was 5 years old.
Oh, my gosh. And that totally rewires your brain, doesn't it? I mean, like I said, you heard me, fifth grade, I can still remember those pictures. Can you imagine that, 5 years old, watching this hardcore? What would that do to the brain?
And she was forced to watch it because she was being trained to act out those things. So think about that side of the porn industry, where it's we have children that are being forced to watch it so that then those children have to act those things out on adult men.
Yeah.
And just that aspect and what it's done to her and the pain, and then trying to have a healthy sexual life as an adult with partners that, you know, whether that's a spouse, a partner, whoever, whatever that looks like, mm-hmm. and the battles that they have to go through. And it goes back to childhood and what they were exposed to.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that we should do an entire episode on demand. We certainly can do and will do an entire episode on pornography. But something that you said a minute ago that I think is important is men don't talk about these things with other men. And I'm the first one to admit that I would never challenge anyone when they told a sexist joke. And I probably told some in the past and laughed at others. And I will admit, you know, in my early 20s, 30 years ago, I went to a bachelor party and at a strip club, and I can't change the past. I can change the present and the future. So what I would say to men listening and watching is it's not an even trade. It's not a, oh, she wants my money, I want her body. She's okay with that because that's just the business she chose. That's not true. Or even if perhaps she signed the line, okay, I'm going to work in this table dance bar, I'm going to work in this industry, she didn't grow up, I would argue, wanting to be in this industry. And likely one or more bad things happened to her in the past. And I'll give you like kind of last time to talk about this, maybe use a real world example that someone who shows up to work in the sex industry perhaps was raped by a stepfather, kicked out of the house, hooked on drugs. And you as the consumer of that, whether it's again at a strip club, that's pornography in my book, or watching porn, you're contributing to that. So again, you can't change the past, but let's all rally together as good men. And like I said, talking to the men in the audience, to the women in the audience, rally the good men in your life to say no to this type of thing. This is the long-term solution, isn't it? And I've, if you want the last word on this, because I think this is so powerful. And then again, we'll commit to doing one or two episodes in the future on this because it's so important. And obviously, because this is the long-term solution.
Thank you, Matt. And again, thank you for your passion. Thank you for being vulnerable yourself and speaking out, because I do think men need to say, let's be a part of that solution and stop this.
Yes.
But also understanding the layers of how this industry is all connected.
Yeah.
So I appreciate that, Matt. And thank you all for listening. We've been talking about the Super Bowl. We've been talking about vulnerabilities. We've been talking about U.S. trafficking and the demand and how it all works together. And again, we're having these conversations that are very difficult because we want to start the conversations that then happen in your homes and in your lives. And we want to help rally together for this movement to stop human trafficking and stop sexual exploitation. So thank you for joining us on the Voices for Freedom Anti-Trafficking podcast. I'm here with my co-host, Matt, and we just are so grateful for you guys for showing up for these conversations.
Thanks for listening. Did you enjoy this episode? If so, please leave us a review and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. If you have ideas for future episodes, email us at voicesforfreedom@ourrescue.org. Lastly, we encourage you to join the fight. Make a difference today by donating at ourrescue.org or text podcast to 855-944-5646. Again, that number is 855-944-5646.
Be sure to join us next week as I interview Lieutenant John Hanning, one of the handlers of our amazing ESD canines. Be sure to watch us on our YouTube channel to actually see this amazing dog. You won't want to miss it. Join us then.